Coming to you from dreary Portland, Oregon.
What the fuck?
Shut up, lady. Fuck up the audience. Your hosts, Katie Cassidy and Aaron Brancher, have some hot takes on film, cinema, and the movies. That's all the same thing. It's the Ask Backwards Podcast. You idiot. You moron. You stupid bitch.
I saw two of the movies we're talking about out of the three. We're talking about Monster, Alpha Dogs, and Boys Don't Cry. Oh, by the way, I'm Katie Cassidy. This is Connor Mini. Yeah, I saw Monster and Boys Don't Cry when I was like 10 years old. And those were, as we'll get into, are super fucked up. But I remember seeing those and being thoroughly confused and traumatized and intrigued. And telling a bunch of people at school. I was in fifth grade. I went to this elementary school. We just moved out to the suburbs. And telling a bunch of people about these fucked up movies, particularly Boys Don't Cry. And I mean, you saw it. Like, could you imagine if you had a kid and they came home and like we're going
their
on
friend was talking about like this crazy
yeah you can't hang out with them anymore.
No, that kid would get outcasted.
Yeah, you can't chill with that family anymore. You can't go to that house. There's no supervision.
No, exactly. Like they let their fifth grade daughter watch that movie.
Oh, that's a little story for you.
Can't believe you saw that young. I watched that as a 22-year-old man, and I'm like,
dude,
devastated.
It's crazy. They're good. They're bad, but they're good. Not bad, but they're sad. And they're good. This is like sad guy cinema, crime drama edition.
Yeah, like sad guy cinema, but like true life edition. Yeah. Like all this stuff happened. Like we're talking about three movies today that all took place. Like, are based off real events and real things.
Yeah.
And maybe, for the movie's sake, might have been dramatized or romanticized a lot, but, like, still got the point across. Like, these are real people. Like,
yeah,
this really
real
happened.
People, real stories. And I just noticed, as I'm looking at the list of dates and stuff, all of these happened, like, in real time within a decade of each other.
Really?
All of these crimes, like, that are depicted in the movies. So that's kind of interesting. I just noticed that. Nothing more on it. But yeah, no, they are very real and talking about some really bleak, like, underbelly of society stuff that I feel like, I mean, you know, I like movies that kind of shed light on things that a lot of people turn away from acknowledging, and I feel like all three of these do that. I'd say Boys Don't Cry the most out of all of them.
I agree with you.
Should we start with Boys Don't Cry? I mean, that's first in the order they came out.
Yeah.
What do you think? What are you thinking? We could either start with Boys Don't Cry or we could start with Alpha Dogs.
I think we should start with Boys Don't Cry.
Okay. All right. So we have Boys Don't Cry, for anyone who hasn't seen it. Came out in 1999 and had Hilary Swank, Chloe, and I can never pronounce her last name,
The mom from the American Horror Story Hotel season.
Yeah, exactly. Her. She's in it. And we got a bunch of, like, people that became very well-known actors after this and even during it. I don't know. I mean, I was three when that came out. But, you know, they were popular at that time.
Speaking on, like, what's going on?
You know, in the film industry, it's a three-year-old, man.
1999, I remember the film industry very distinctly.
But it was written and directed by Kimberly Pierce, which I thought was cool that we have a woman director.
Yeah, two of the movies that we watched had a female director.
Yeah.
It was really interesting. I like that.
Yeah, and she really, Boys Don't Cry covers, anyone that hasn't seen it, the Brandon Tina story. And I would say, don't look it up. Don't spoil it for yourself. He went into it. You went into it.
Yeah. So I was told absolutely nothing about this movie. Like we were watching other, like we watched Alpha Dogs first just because she wanted me to see that movie and it was really cool. And I liked it a lot. And it kind of like, it shocked me a little bit. And I was like, whoa, that was crazy. I want to watch another movie that like, you know, shocks me. Like how like that they did. Cause like the way Alpha Dogs did it made me kind of sick, like in a cool way.
Yeah.
And, like, in a way I could, like, really relate with. And Cassandra was like, oh, you know, let's watch Boys Don't Cry. And I was like, what's it about? She's like, oh, I can't tell you anything. I was like, okay, so for, like, 2 weeks I'm going blind, not looking up anything about this movie. And we watched it the other night. And, yeah, I would say if you really want if you don't, if like, if you're interested in watching a movie that I don't know how to explain it, like without giving it away.
It just makes you feel things that it just, for me and anyone I've really talked to and got feedback, takes us so far out of the comfort zone I'm used to just as a person in society, as an audience member, as a consumer, as a woman, as just someone in the world. Like, it takes me so far out of that comfort zone and brings these really, really, really ugly, awful things to light that have gotten better but are not gone in our problems in society at all, you know? So, yeah, the Brandon Tina story, basically, to give a gist, is Hilary Swank plays Brandon Tina, who is a transgender man, but this was in the 90s, you know? So we don't have, like, the, like, trans pride and trans rights that we see now.
Wasn't it the 80s?
No, like, this was the 90s.
But didn't it take place during the 80s and the movie was made in 99?
I don't know.
I think at the end it
here,
was
here, give
like,
it a fact check.
Yeah, I'll fact check it real quick.
Yeah, I thought it was 92, but I don't know where. I might have just made that number up out of nowhere. So anyways, this was at a time where we didn't really have these LGBTQ rights that we have and are like moving towards now. And basically, so we see Hilary Swank playing Brandon Tina and going through these struggles of living in like very rural Nebraska, and they're calling it a gender identity crisis at a time as its medical term. And she's going on as this Brandon character. So referring to him as he from here forward.
93.
Okay, cool. So yeah, in 93, rural Nebraska, Brandon Tina identifies as a male before he has these resources available that we have now, and is going through life in a very transphobic area that's not open-minded.
Having
to
completely hide his identity. Mm-hmm.
And just act completely as a man and present himself as a man. And then he gets in with this little group of people he meets at a bar. And that sort of carries us the rest of the way. It's the story about him with
the
those
story,
people.
Yeah, exactly. And then, you know, in a lot of these movies we see, it was a very romantic movie at times. It was like so very heartfelt in the
intimate
way that like Brandon was just searching for love,
mm-hmm.
and that he just desperately wanted to be accepted by somebody, and he found that somebody.
Yeah.
And the world wasn't ready for Brandon.
No.
At all.
And what was crazy, so Chloe plays his love interest, whose name is Lana. So Lana and Brandon are just like, she is just miserable in this small town. She's like 70 miles outside of Lincoln, Nebraska is where this takes place. So, you know, she's miserable with her family and this really toxic psycho dude and his
that
toxic
just like,
psycho dick buddy.
That just like they were both in prison, but like her alcoholic mom is just okay with them like hanging out. And like when she was in third grade, apparently she would write letters to him
yeah.
when he was in prison.
Oh no, when she was 13, she became
That's what
she
it
was his pen pal. And he was obviously a grown man, so whatever weird grooming the mom was letting take place, just such a sick little household Lana's in. And then Brandon comes onto the scene, and they just have this, like, intimate, true connection. And as we go through the story, we just see Lana be so accepting and loving and doesn't care about what, you know, all of these other discriminatory things Brandon's experienced, you know, in his life up to that point. And yeah, like you said, the world just wasn't fucking ready for it.
The world
like,
wasn't fucking ready
closed-minded
for Brandon.
Closed-minded fucking rubes, bro. Like, yeah, but it was so good. That movie's so good. It came out in 1999, so 22 years ago almost. And, like, I think it's worth talking about now and forever. And then there's a documentary on it because all of these were true events. Like, they kept
I
want to
see the documentary of the movie or, like, the
documentary
of, like,
of the true story. So we see, like, real-life Lana's mom
wow.
being interviewed. And it's heartbreaking and it's great. And I would say watch the documentary and the movie because they did a great job. The production team and like Kimberly Pierce writing it like stayed so true to the story as far as.
It's crazy. It's crazy the level in which they were able to talk about that subject back then. Is insane that I haven't seen more movies like that since.
This is so beyond its years. If this movie came out right now, it would be coming out in the time of the wave of trans LGBTQ acceptance.
An incredible amount of Oscars if it was coming out like
yeah.
around now.
I think it won some awards. I was looking into it and then got distracted. Smack. Sorry. I was looking into it, but so, I think Hilary Swank won a couple awards for this, if I remember correctly.
I would hope so.
Yeah.
That was great. That was insane.
Poke. Oh, my God. Yeah. Okay, yeah. Like, trigger warning, and I don't mean that in a mocking way at all. If you don't want to hear about some more graphic sexual assault stuff and just general violence, like, that's a little bit talked about probably from this point forward, honestly. Because yeah. The rest of the movies are pretty violent.
Yeah.
When we see in Boys Don't Cry, the way that sexual assault used to be handled, truly used to be handled, and...
By authorities.
Yeah, by authorities and by... Like, the sheriff that was supposed to be, like, trusted, he literally is treating it. He calls the sexual assault, where'd he poke ya?
Where'd the boy poke you?
Where'd he poke?
When he found out...
You son of a bitch!
When he found out you were a woman, where did he poke you?
Poke.
In your vagina? And like...
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, literally
that
what?
That was making me sick, bro.
And in the documentary, you watch it, and that is very much how the sheriff...
Because they recorded that conversation, right? Mm-hmm. Oh my God, so, I need to hear the real one.
Yeah, it's sickening to hear just how complicit the authorities were in letting these, like, actual hate crimes happen.
Hilary Swank did such a phenomenal job in that movie.
So good. It was heart-wrenching.
That's like a place I don't... see myself in all the time. I don't I'm not immersed in that. Like, I'm
out of that comfort zone. Like, we're talking like about.
That made me feel something I didn't think I could ever feel, and it made me.
Yeah.
I don't know how to explain it.
And it talked about something that I think that, like, we're very lucky to not have to know how to feel, because that is something like the trans community still experiences. I mean, that was in 99. But there's still people that are, like, acting like that and acting fucking crazy about people, like, just minding their own business. Like, bitch, mind your business. Like, so it's kind of cool that it took you to a place to experience that, because, like, that is, like, a reality that a lot of people experience. So when a movie could make the audience feel something or experience something through a whole new lens, it's, like that's, like, beyond art to me. Like, I don't know what that is, but it's, like, further than just art. Like, it's an experience.
It is. And on top of everything, it's a crazy testament to, like, the filmmaking ability of that director. And that, like, and she wrote it, too, correct,
yeah.
Right?
She wrote and directed
and directed the shit out of that movie.
I wonder what else she's done. I kind of am curious. Yeah. That was, I want more. Like, what else?
There's no way you make that movie and then you make, like...
Yeah.
Like, you just make normal movies after that. Like, no, like, you're a...
Like, you're an artist. Like, you are, like, a genius.
Yeah, but I don't want to give too much away about that movie. I think I think that's definitely one, if out of all of these, that, you know, because I think it's the most important one that's going on now.
Yeah, it's forever relevant.
Yeah.
Forever relevant.
And I think it needs to be seen by people. I think it's a very important movie.
Yeah, it's huge to just, like... the LGBTQ community, to women, to people who just feel kind of like a minority or oppressed. Like, it, like, speaks so loud. It's so good. Yeah, I can't stress that enough.
It's crazy to see, like, that situation take place in, like, Kansas.
To intimately watch it unfold, too.
In a place that, like, completely is alien to, like, you and I.
Yeah, Kansas.
I feel at least like there would be, there would be some.
Oh, no, Nebraska.
Yeah, was it? Yeah, it was.
They're
Nebraska.
The same in my mind.
They're nothing places.
Yeah. Sorry to but Nebraska viewer.
Like, they just live in this hobunk ass place that's never going to understand.
Yeah.
That's never going to understand in a million years. There's, like, three people in, like, 100, like,
yeah, everybody
mile
knows
radius.
Each other. There's nothing. They hang out, go fucking mudding and drag each other around the back of the truck. I remember I asked you, like, because you grew up in Tennessee, so I feel like you're, like, the southern guide. I don't really know about the South.
I mean, I don't really, like, I never really partook in any of that shit because I don't like it. But
you had your truck meetup times.
There were times where people, like, would just, like, I like when they're, like, just set up in, like, a big circle of their headlights. And
yeah.
Yeah, people did
people
that.
People really do that.
People do that shit all the time.
That baffles me. That's, like, I don't know, it's funny to me.
Yeah, it's like a fucking pastime, daggum it.
It's a chill set.
Yeah, it's a super chill set. Anyways, everybody should watch Boys Don't Cry.
Definitely. Definitely, definitely. So, I guess if we're moving chronologically, do you have anything more on Boys Don't Cry before we pop on to Monster?
Oh. Like, I want to talk about it more, but the thing is like, I don't feel like... I feel like people should watch it. Like, that's all I'm going to leave it at that. We're like, let's skip past this part.
Get past it?
Yeah, okay. We'll skip this little segment.
Yeah, we've talked a lot about our thoughts and feels on it. Let's let them form theirs.
Yeah.
So, moving on.
I'm proud of us. I don't feel like we really gave anything
away. Yeah, we're getting better. You guys listening, we're starting to stop spoiling stuff.
Yeah, I don't like doing that, but sometimes it's necessary. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's a movie you shouldn't really care about. Like, just watch it, whatever. Being baby.
All right, so moving on. We're back from the puppy break to talk about... Back
better than ever, baby.
We're talking about Monster. Came out in 2003. I feel like that one is so much more well-known than Boys Don't Cry.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
I wrote this down, you guys. I watched
Monster when I was, like, super young.
Let me present the awards to you. Ready? I wrote these all down. It won the Academy Award, Critics' Choice Award, Golden Globe, Screen Actors Guild, and a Silver Bear. And Charlize Theron won a lot of those, but the movie also won its own award.
That's sick.
Silver.
So, my bad.
Don't ever play. It's the Silver Bear.
It's the Silver Bear Award.
I don't know, but she won it. And sick. It's more for the Silver Bears than I've ever won. The most
honey on set.
The sweetest actress. Has. But, yeah, so I feel like it has a lot more attention, obviously. And for good reason.
Yeah, fucking Monster is a fucking super good movie.
Yeah, it's great.
It's such a good movie. It's, like... Did you say the... best acted movie on this list? Because I would.
Yes.
100. Okay, good. I'm glad we're in agreement. Like, not to play Hillary Swank, may I call you. like, not to nickel and dime her, but, like,
no, I don't know. Keep going.
Yeah, but Charlize Theron. How do you say her name? Is that how you pronounce it?
I don't
Charlize
know.
Charlize Theron?
I hear Theron? People say Charlize Theron, and I don't know what I'm talking about, so that's how I'm going to say it.
Okay, Charlize Theron. Oh, my God. I hate the fact that we don't know.
She's from South Africa. She has a beautiful, exotic name.
Is she really?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Cool facts about Charlize. This is Charlize Theron.
Yeah, that's actually what we're segueing into, is just talking about how she could step on my hands if she wants.
That's so stupid. That was a sleeper agent.
But yeah, so we have Monster, directed and written by Patty Jenkins,
another lady director.
So that's cool to see, and it's covering for anyone.
It's really cool.
Yeah, who's been sleeping under a rock. It's about Eileen Wuornos, one of, like, the main big time female serial killers. She killed seven she men. Hair
like that.
Yeah, she goes. Oh no, not the bangs, dude. I can't fuck up the bangs. Don't play. Okay.
Don't play.
So she killed seven men between 1989 and 1990. And basically we're just following this biopic. And I don't even feel like it's a biopic on her being a killer.
Yeah,
it's
life. They never call her Eileen the whole movie, they call her Lee.
Holy shit, bro. I didn't even catch that. Yeah, you're so right.
They call her Lee. And if you don't... This is another one of those movies. Like, if you don't know about Eileen Wuornos, don't worry about it. Watch the movie.
Yeah, you'll learn it.
Cool.
In the movie.
Yeah, and you know what's really cool? You kind of learn it through her perspective. And, you know, not to say that you feel, you know, necessarily sympathetic for the fact that she's a serial killer, but you feel sympathetic for her in the fact that, you know, she was a woman who was put through a traumatic situation and didn't get the help she needed in order to, you know, not have, you know, a killing spree take place.
Literally pushed to the motherfucking brink. So like,
push it to the limit, head ass.
We see her go. I mean, so it starts, she's a young girl. She's 13 years old, and she's talking about the first time she, like, basically, engaged in being a sex worker.
Mm-hmm.
And how, like, through her life from age 13, she just continued, like, being a prostitute. And she calls herself, I'm a hooker. And that's what she says over and over. And I remember you said, imagine waking up every day and telling yourself, I'm a hooker. And I was like, damn, real life, though. Like, imagine that. Like, that's the title that you live under and operate under. And that's how you see yourself and present yourself. Like, so we see her meet Selby, played by Christina Ricci, who is just, like, like we talked about, two of like the really most stunning women in the world in Hollywood at that time, looking like fucking bowling alley trash, bro. Looking absolutely like the 1 a.m. Walmart people.
Oh, yeah.
And it was like, I love when actors could put their like beauty to the side and just like totally be just in that role and be gritty and sometimes ugly and just be it and own it. And it's just so cool and authentic. And like, so yeah, we see them meet at the bar and
just the way they hold themselves. Like both of them, I feel like, just fit the role so perfectly. I believed them, like, those two together.
And I would have like, never in my crazy. Mind paired them in a movie. Like,
no.
I would have never really thought about it, I guess. And they complemented each other perfectly.
And as a love interest, no less. They're having to play these two, like, really, really far-out characters.
Yeah.
And not only playing these two far-out characters, but also having to play them in love. And, mm-hmm. like, be in, like, a really intimate sexual relationship.
Yeah.
Like, the amount of tasteful sex scenes in that movie, I feel like.
They were all with reason and not... I mean, it was directed by, like, not to be, like, biased, but by a woman. So, I mean, you know, she wasn't just being gratuitous and, like, yeah, put that nipple in the camera. Like...
Yeah, they like, rarely did that. Like, I think the first time you see, like, full frontal nudity of, like, Eileen Wuornos
mm-hmm.
is... when she's in the bathroom talking to Selby at the motel, and Selby's yeah. like, oh, we have money now. Cool. Yay. We're going to do good things. And like Lee is telling Selby like, yeah, you know, we're doing great, kid. Yeah. Whatever you want. I'll do whatever you want.
Yeah, and she's then giving it zooms her love. Out. Yeah.
And like, she's so happy. And then she just looks at her naked body and she's covered in blood.
Yeah. Covered in blood. Cause at that point she had, that was like her several kill because the first one, I felt completely justified in that man.
100%. Again, her survival instincts are so good.
Literally. So,
oh my God. She was a woman of action that whole movie.
Those who haven't seen it, she... yeah, let me blast through this plot. I feel like we keep getting sidetracked. So
yeah.
She meets Christina Ricci, a.k.a. Selby, at the bar. She's like, I'm not a lesbian, but says it like in a lot more derogatory way. And Selby's like, chill out, bitch. Like, we're just trying to be nice. But also in a much calmer way. And they end up, you know, making out, or no, not yet.
Yeah, no, not
no. No, they say they're going to meet up at the skating rink the next night.
No, they end up hanging out for the rest of the night and, like, drinking
beer yeah, together the
and having a fun time.
Yeah, yeah, they vibe, yeah, for
and,
sure.
And, no, she go and then she goes and sleeps over at her house because she has nowhere to
that
stay.
That was that night. That oh, my God, night. You're right. Thank you. God damn, thank you.
She needed a place to sleep, so she got some of her uncles. Selby was living with her aunt and uncle
yeah.
at the time.
And her super religious family, like, sent her there because they were pissed that she was gay.
Yeah.
And so...
When- yeah, so Lee stayed at their house for a night, got caught, ran away, and then they met up at the bowling alley the next day.
Yeah.
On a date.
And Lee gets there, has no money to get in. Selby runs up, pays. And that sounds like such a minute moment, but seeing it, I feel like it sets up, like, a lot. And shows, like, that Selby is very, like... kind of pushover, codependent, giving, just wants somebody, is very lonely, and that Lee will kind of, slash Eileen, will kind of go with anyone that will provide for her, because she's grown up having to do that. And yeah. So it shows that they automatically fit that codependent dynamic, just with that one simple thing, paying for her at the door without her asking, and Eileen showing up expecting somebody will take care of it.
Mm-hmm.
And... from there, we sort of see their transformation into this, again, sort of like Boys Don't Cry, really intimate love story where...
Yeah, Lee never thought she could, like, love a woman.
No.
She had never thought about that.
Yeah, and it's like Selby being so soft and kind and patient, like, lets Lee drop her guard to then become this, like, really masculine lesbian, yeah. like, overnight, which I thought was funny.
My girlfriend, bro.
Yeah, wearing that big stupid leather jacket and shit.
Yeah, like, really embracing the fact that she's gay now.
Yeah, she's like, this is what the fuck it is. Like,
yeah. Revelation.
Yeah, dude, she came flying out of that closet with that leather jacket and was not going back.
Fucking, like, a guitar solo.
Yes, exactly.
Gay.
Big letters over. Yeah, anyway, she went on her little killing spree. It starts because one of the Johns that she goes with to make some money to meet up with Selby.
To get a room so they could have a night together.
Yeah. And so Selby's waiting outside of this place for her as Eileen is getting sexually assaulted with a fucking tire iron and all tied up. So graphic.
Like, yeah. This guy, it was premeditated for sure.
Yeah. He wanted to like beat and rape a sex worker.
Mm-hmm.
And he sure did. And so she gets her hands free. And when she does it, we see it from her point of view. And it's like, I got my hands free. I'm like, oh my God, bitch. Yes. And like you said, doesn't hesitate.
No, she did not fucking hesitate. She got in her fucking bag. She knew she had a fucking gun.
She was ready.
Blasted my man. Yeah. Like Frank.
I got my gun and started blasting.
Started blasting. And it wasn't like point at for a second. They look at each other, have a moment type movie. No. Immediately.
She came out and said was
firing. No more screen time for this character. Yeah. He dies now.
Right now.
And this is where it's her story and this is her fucking life. And you get to be invested in the mental illness of this woman after like this event.
Yeah. And it was like, this was her breaking point because she had grown up dealing with this. I mean, being a sex worker from the age of 13, like Jesus Christ, you know? So, you know, that's not the first time that it happened. That was her breaking point. And it is so fucking justified. And when she gets in his clothes and takes his stupid hat, that stupid son of a bitch trucker hat.
That was so funny. Like, she ended up wearing, like, the clothes of, like, the guys, like, after, like, dipping on the crime scene a lot. Like, it was just, like, Charlize Theron wearing this big, stupid red and white trucker hat that's in this, what was it, like, an overall? What
was the name? It was a mechanic Carl? Suit of the guy. Yeah, I think it was, yeah.
Fucking Carl, are you kidding me?
And then pulling up on Selby, like, come on, oh, I'm Carl. Sorry, come with me. And Selby goes, and that, so we see them staying together, and, you know, Eileen keeps killing, and.
Because she needs money, she knows no other way. She tries to go straight, but, like, she's, like, a homeless woman. Like,
yeah, she's, oh, God, that seed. So that we get to the point, she decides she wants to stop being a hooker, get her life together. She's going to temp agencies, dressed like a homeless person.
Like she has like a floral shirt on with like a sports coat over it.
Yeah, like a Tommy Bahama shirt.
And like moccasins.
Riding a bike with her hair slicked back like Dog the Bounty Hunter. And it's really sad. We see her trying and getting turned away in society, just really not having the resources that she needs. She tells this lady at the temp agency.
Scooby Snack. Oh my God.
Yeah. Hold on. Pause. So Mac could take a drinky. Oh, you're done? You're done with that sip? Cough. All right, we're good.
Yeah.
So basically, we see her go to this temp agency. So yeah, sorry. Back on. Like I was saying, so we see her really trying, and she goes up to that woman at the temp agency, and she goes, woman to woman, I'm a hooker. I'm trying to get my life together. I'm trying to go straight. And the lady just turns away, and Eileen goes, fuck, and, like, freaks out. She's frustrated. And then the woman working there sends security to basically get her out. And it's, like, she's trying to be better for herself, for Selby. Like, she wants a life.
Yeah, she feels like Selby can be the person that loves her.
Exactly.
She doesn't want to hook anymore.
And society is, like, not only not helping her, hurting her, because when she's leaving one of those interviews, this cop picks her up and sexually assaults her and reveals that he's done it before and also like beat the brakes off her when he did it before. And it's like, she cannot catch one motherfucking break. Like, so she kills again. That's her second kill after that, if I remember right. And is it the third?
I don't think she kills the cop.
No, not the cop. I said she kills again.
It's her second.
Yeah, right? Okay. Because she was trying to get better.
Yeah.
And it's like, she's like, fuck it. And honestly, like, yeah, kind of. I'd be like, fuck it. I don't know if I'd go kill someone, but I get that she was like, fuck it, I'm trying. And I can't succeed. She doesn't have the coping skills to figure out like how to keep trying.
Nobody has coping skills. I have great coping skills. Nobody in these movies have coping skills.
I'm literally so healthy.
My mental health is phenomenal.
Shining. So, I don't know. Each kill is less justified.
Yeah, for sure.
And then by the end, it's like, man, like, you did too much.
You did way too much.
You did, you know, far what's the too thing? Much.
She knows she did too much.
Yeah.
She knows she did too much. Because the worst part about it is, like, knowingly, you know Selby knew.
Mm-hmm.
You know Selby knew this was happening. Because where else are they getting the money?
That's exactly, yeah, Lisa, where the fuck do you think the money was coming from? Like,
yeah, and she's like, I knew about one lead.
Yeah.
And he's like, no, you fucking knew.
And she pulls out all the newspaper clippings, and it's like,
that's what she kept. She kept all the
newspaper. Yeah, this bitch is cold. But then, yeah, she kills
Selby that. Was encouraging it at a point.
Yeah, because I'm going to starve, Lee. I'm starving here.
I can't get a job, Lee.
Pulling her cast off, being the big mullet crybaby.
Can't get a job with a cast?
Yeah. Can't go file for disability.
Can't go work at a fast food restaurant.
Can't go sell some plasma, Selby. Goddamn.
But no, you can't do that. But, you know, Lee can go suck dick.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like that's
you so suck selfish. One dick, Selby. This is a partnership.
If I'm sucking dick, Selby, you're sucking dick. I promise you.
If I'm sucking the dick, you're at least sucking the ball, Selby, and I'm not playing.
Oh, my God. That's the uncut gems.
But
no, but she's like so sorry, Bogart.
Selby encouraged her.
Yeah, she's just so like disrespectful. Like at a point, like she doesn't like she's sweet in the sense like she wants to help Lee and like they love it. You can feel like they love each other, but it's such a toxic relationship.
It's so their needs, both of their needs have never been met, and for the first time they're both like safe, and we see them like slowly dropping their walls with each other because Selby, I don't know, grow like it's like the more
she grows past Lee.
Exactly. The more Lee gives and drops her guard and falls in love with Selby, the more Selby is outgrowing her. And we're seeing like this like chasing of Selby almost as Selby is pulling away and wants to hang out with random people and goes to the bar like impersonating Lee and stealing Lee's story to feel cool and like Selby wants to be her own person.
And Lee just wants to feel safe with somebody.
Yeah, that's all she wants. And I feel like Selby being a woman brings that, like, lowers that threat because she's dealt with such trauma from men.
And what's so cool about this movie is, it's like, we're talking about it and, like, this, like, we're talking about, like the love story aspect of this movie. This movie's called Monster for a reason. It's fucking dark.
It's very dark.
It's super dark. And, like, you get, like, real invested in, like, what's going on in Lee's head, man.
Yeah, because Lee kills everyone knows pretty much what happens.
That is a woman who has never, ever, ever thought about the fact that she has anxiety in her life.
That's what we're saying. She doesn't have the wherewithal to know, like,
what's going on inside her head.
She just is reacting to the trauma and to her feelings and probably mostly fear and survival-based reactions because that's all her life really is, you know? And so after she kills that cop, like, she knows it's over, you know? Like, she's trying to get out of there. Selby wants to go home. And when she takes her to the bus or train or whatever...
Has that breakdown
scene. I thought I was going to throw up, dude. That was so sad. Oh, my God.
She's like, I fucking know I did too much. I love you. I love you. Like, please come back.
Yeah, she was like, I always said I'd take you to the bus. And it was like.
It was, oh, my God.
And Selby just wanted to leave, and she left. And then when Selby was on the phone with her and trying to talk about the details of the crimes, you know, Lee goes, what are you doing? Why are you doing this? Like, Lee knew what she was doing.
Yeah.
And I'm like knowing that Lee loved and trusted her so much, like I hurt for Lee, even though Lee is obviously like supposed to be the villain, like I felt betrayed for her. I'm like, what are you doing? But also it's not on Selby to protect her, so I'm like, ah.
Yeah, I completely agree. It's a fucking sad movie. And like the whole time, like there's like this like monologue like of Eileen Wuornos like just talking to herself, talking like the world has hope, and like you weirdly feel for like you're like, yeah, like, you know, she's like remaining
hopeful, she's like going to die,
yeah, like she's going to like death row, and she's like feeling hope, like she's talking about hope and like love and shit,
yeah,
and then she giggles and it's like, I gotta tell you something. Mm-hmm. Like, what, you didn't believe any of that shit? She she died not feeling loved.
I mean, and honestly, not to sound corny, but she was born not feeling loved either. Like, she talks early in the movie about being sexually abused when she was 8 or 9 years old by her dad's friend and her dad getting mad at her. Like, she never knew that safety. So it's unfortunately very unsurprising that she died not knowing it too, you know?
And a lot of this is really just like, I feel like this one, especially Monster,
mm-hmm.
like Hollywood, like glamming it up and making it like, even though like they made it gritty and hardcore, it's still like lovey and beautiful and
very much,
and it's very romanticized as I don't think the actual events, you know, were probably represented as like beautiful and, you know what I mean, and charming.
Oh, of course, dude. You know that everywhere they were smelled like a fucking nasty barroom floor and armpits, like that's stinky shit, dude. Like, they're living a stinky, dirty life. You know it wasn't beautiful. But, Like, the what's there was beautiful. Like, Eileen Wuornos didn't get to feel love through her life. And if she did get to feel it for that little bit of time, like, that is kind of beautiful and worth, like, glamming up.
Yeah. I agree.
That'd be siding with the serial killer.
That's what I'm saying. And so I'm trying not to be too sympathetic to a serial killer, but, like, but you know, I understand, like, what you're going through, like, in the beginning.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
You're doing too much, girl.
At first, I'm with her. Like, the first one, even the second one, I'm like, that was too much, but I'll let it slide. I know you're figuring things out. And then the third
you're
one.
You're figuring out what you do.
Figuring out what you do, Eileen. And then by the third one, I'm like, so this isn't what we do.
this isn't what we do. You're acting like Hoffman, Eileen.
Yeah, she was having Hoffman energy.
You're Hoffman right now.
No.
You're going rogue. You're a rogue agent. Tobin Bell wouldn't approve. He'd approve of the first one.
Yeah, she is an agent of chaos.
Yeah, she is an agent of chaos. The way they portray her in the media is crazy. Because, like, there's... the only other, like, Eileen Wuornos thing I've ever seen was an American Horror Story Hotel.
Mm-hmm.
Played by the chick who played, like, Misty Day and Coven.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that's the second time I've brought up American Horror Story.
Because they be casting the best people.
Yeah, but so she's, like, playing like Eileen Wuornos, and I was like, I don't know how much of that is Charlize Theron. Ah! Or how much of it is Eileen Wuornos. All right, we're back and better than ever, baby.
Okay, so yeah, that wraps up Monster, really, I mean.
Yeah, Monster's a really good movie. You guys should watch it. I know we just explained the shit out of it, but, like, still watch it. Like, yeah, the performances in that movie are crazy.
And even how much we just explained it, we still left a lot out. We left so much out. Yeah, go watch that. Twists,
turns.
And if you've seen it, just give it a rewatch. The fact that she...
And it's funny, too.
Oh, yeah.
It's super funny. Eileen had me fucking geeking out. That bitch was funny as hell.
She's so out of pocket. Like,
she's
super
out of pocket.
Like, the people around her and her reactions, it's like...
There's a cockroach in my fucking salad. About this fucking big.
Flipping the table with her big stupid leather jacket.
I'm paying customer. I can smoke wherever I want to. You can't.
But to be fair, that guy, the manager of the restaurant, was fucking tweaking, reaching for Christina Ricci's hand. Like, don't ever touch me, bro. I mean, she, again, did too much, but she wasn't wrong for telling him to fuck off.
I agree.
I don't think she was wrong for most of what she was upset about. She just did far too much. And you gotta not do so much.
You gotta chill out. Be a serial killer sometimes. I know it's hard.
Can't.
I mean, Monster kinda did what fucking, that one movie did, the Ted Bundy one with Zac Efron.
Yeah,
one has, like, a really long title that doesn't have the words Ted or Bundy in it.
Wait, I could remember it. It's...
You can't.
I don't know it.
Strange and...
Wickedly evil something.
Yeah, strange and, like, wickedly evil deeds or some weird shit like that.
Yeah, Mr. Deeds.
Yeah, Mr. Deeds, starring Adam Sandler, that's what it was.
That's the Bundy one.
I love Mr. Deeds. I got the funny foot joke with the, like,
That's another time, another podcast.
Adam Sandler foot.
Adam Sandler? Okay, foot. Everyone, here's a little break before we segue
into Ted Bundy. It's like the monster kind of does what Ted Bundy does.
In the sense that
it makes you very sympathetic to the killer. Because, like, it's, in a way, that movie, the Ted Bundy one, is, like, showing it through, like, his girlfriend's perspective.
Yeah, and a lot of people were pissed about Ted Bundy's, or that depiction
so
of Ted
likeable.
Bundy. But people were pissed about that movie because, they're like, didn't show any crimes. We didn't get to see the crimes. Like, what the fuck are you, a 14-year-old?
I see
a little dead body. Like, the terror that he had inflicted just existing and gaslighting everyone around him is very disturbing.
The fact that this man was likable.
Yeah.
I kept forgetting he was Ted Bundy in the whole movie.
Yeah, dude, especially Zac Efron playing him. He looked like hot Ted Bundy because everyone's like, oh, Ted Bundy was hot. Maybe if he had lip fillers and did his eyebrows, but I see pictures of him and he looked crazed.
Looks like a Geico caveman.
Yeah, I'm not into it. Zac Efron looked like if he was hot.
Yeah.
And so I was like, and I remember reading, because I like went on like the serial killer search that everyone goes on at some point. I feel like everyone goes on like a big spree of learning about serial killers.
Dahmer. I know a lot about, like, I know a bit about Dahmer.
I want to watch My Friend Dahmer. I haven't seen that.
Yeah, the one with fucking Jason Lynch from, like, that shitty Disney Channel show, Ross and Lynch. or whatever that
show was. You're the Disney guy. That's your area.
I'm not
the Disney
guy. I'm the Cartoon Network boy. I'll have you know. I'm not My last name's Minnie for a reason.
Call me Mouse.
Call me Mouse. Mickey Mouse.
But, No, I feel like I've heard that my friend Dahmer kind of had the same vibe as the Zac Efron Bundy movie, as in it was a different perspective.
And it's interesting because he started real early when he was a teenager, and it was heavily related because of the fact like he was like he had like heavily repressed homosexuality.
Mm-hmm.
Like he's a different beast than Ted Bundy.
Have you seen? There's a movie with it's called The Last, the guy's book is called The Last Victim, but the movie's called Dear Mr. Gacy. Have you seen it?
No, I don't know. See, like, I don't know a lot about
Gacy. We need to watch that. It's about one of these dudes who was, like, decided to start writing Gacy for a project in college, like a psychology thing, I think, and then they become, like, pen pals and on the phone, and Gacy starts, like, puppeteering him, basically, from the prison. It's a true story. This was a real guy. That is real correspondence. He wrote a whole book about it that I read. That was, it's called The Last Victim. If anyone wants to read it, it's really crazy. And it's very psychologically disturbing in a much darker sense than the My Friend Dahmer in the Bundy movie. But I think you really like it.
That sounds incredible.
It's great. Oh, I forgot about that movie, Memory Unlocked.
No, dude. Yeah, we should watch the shit out of that immediately.
We should do a serial killer podcast.
I agree.
I'm down. That's what we'll do then soon.
Sick. Okay, and then, you know, moving on to something, I'd honestly say the lightest movie.
Yeah, out of all, and not light by any.
No, not light by
just
any.
Just compared to these two.
Alpha Dogs.
Yeah, Alpha Dogs, 2006.
It was my first time seeing Alpha Dogs and my first time seeing Boys Don't Cry this time around. I feel like you've seen all of these movies probably more than me. I think I might have seen Monster a couple, like, more times than you. But I, like, you know way more about these.
Yeah. I mean, my mom, like, works in, like, criminal psychology, so she had all these movies growing up, so I was always, like, hatching the DVDs, and it was, like, these things. Is that out, or are we handing that?
I'm handing it to you. Careful.
Not me putting ash all over my hands.
Not you pinching the cherry.
I mean, it's fine. Okay.
Yeah, but your mom had all these movies.
Oh, yeah, so my mom had all these movies, and she was in school when I was younger, so I was always watching them, and, really, really strange watching them as an adult because they're so fucked up. And so it's weird thinking that I saw them, but now rewatching them, like being into film the way that we are, and as just a consumer, I'm like, Jesus Christ, dude, like, what the fuck? So, like, Alpha Dogs, though, was not written or directed by a woman. This one was by
Nick. Give me a rundown of Alpha Dogs.
Let me tell you who directed it before you give me a rundown of anything.
I think I know what I'm talking about.
I don't think you know shit about Nick Cassavetes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Tell me a thing or two about him.
I can't. Can't do that.
Neither could I. So we're even. But yeah, give him a rundown. What is Alpha Dogs about? Go.
Alpha Dogs. So we got this guy. His name's Johnny Truelove, right?
Sure is.
It's Johnny Truelove. Johnny Truelove is a short little munchkin. He's a little pussy punk.
Played by the cutie, innocent boy and girl next door and Into the Wild dude, Emil whatever.
Yeah. Great actor.
Yeah.
Phenomenal actor. He did such a good job at playing this piece of shit.
Oh, he made me hate him, but I always loved him because he's a cutie. But I still hated his act.
And then, so you got this guy, and he's a would-be gangster. He's a little piece of shit.
Yeah, this is in, his like, the hills of L.A.
His daddy's Bruce Willis. His daddy's doing good things.
We have a great cast.
Great cast in this movie. Ben Foster's in this movie playing a Jewish Nazi. That's crazy.
Sharon Stone is the mom.
You're right.
She's being fucking phenomenal and hot and cool and amazing as always.
Oh, for sure. And so, basically, Johnny Truelove and this guy, like, what's his name? Jason Mazursky?
Jason Mazursky. Jason is the guy that owes Johnny Truelove money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He owes, like, this dude $800, and this guy thinks he's, like, a big, cool fucking gangster that just because he's best friends with Justin Timberlake.
And he's been abusing his friend group and shit, and, like, yeah, being so out of pocket. Because he has money,
because he pays all of them to be there.
Yeah. His dad is plugged in with, like, organized crime is basically the plot behind
it. Yeah, and these guys want to get into that shit. Mm-hmm. They think it's cool to be gangsters.
Yeah.
And Johnny Truelove thinks he's a gangster. He thinks he's a mafioso.
Yeah, he's terrible.
Thinks he's the fucking guy. He thinks he can do what we do, but he can't.
Mr. Meatball. Yeah.
Hey, look at me. Yeah, but this movie's about the youngest person to ever be put on FBI's most wanted list, mm-hmm. and that is Johnny Truelove.
Yeah, he's on it for, like, 10 years.
Yeah. And it's because the Nazi guy owed him money and embarrassed his little punk ass after he tried to, like, fight him. Because he knows Taekwondo. And
yeah.
He whipped the fuck out of his ass.
Yeah.
And then Johnny Truelove saw his little brother walking down the street one day. His little brother looks up to his older brother very much.
Yeah, the brother's, like, 15 and has a super cushy life at home with his mom, Sharon Stone, and the dad.
Yeah, some dad.
Some dad. And has a super cushy life and basically doesn't really know anything about what's about to happen. Like, he's been very sheltered.
Yeah, and he gets abducted by Johnny Truelove, like, just sees him out on the street.
He goes, yeah, snatch that kid, basically.
Like, it'll be funny.
Yeah, it'll be like, what was your thing, JonBenet Killer? Like, you were gonna, like, take him and hold him for ransom? Like, what was your end game?
Yeah.
You fucking putz.
Yeah, so, like, obviously this gets way out of hand because, first off, they're idiots. They just kidnap the kid and kidnap him and just, like, think it would be funny.
And I like that the movie shows each witness because there were, I think, in total, like, 47 witnesses.
Oh, for sure. It was, like, the worst crime ever fucking committed because it was so blatant.
The movie shows us each one, like, labels, like, very small. Witness one, witness two. So if you watch it, keep an eye out because it's kind of cool to see how many people saw this unfold and didn't know what was unfolding.
Yeah.
Not cool, but fucked up and interesting. Not mm-hmm. cool.
But basically, fucking Johnny Truelove and the gang, fucking, and the Scooby gang, fucking abduct this 15-year-old, duct tape him, and, like, basically hold him for ransom.
Yeah, they just start taking him around with them.
And they don't know where to hold him. Like, they're all, like, all Johnny Truelove's friends are just trying to party. They don't understand the severity of what they just did.
Yeah.
And, like, nobody's, like, trying to remedy the situation. Nobody's trying to get in contact with the brother. Nobody's trying to solve this. Everybody's just, like, waiting around.
Yeah, what do we do with this kid? They're bringing him to the parents apartments. Call the
fucking police. Like, they're freaking the fuck out.
Mm-hmm.
And Ben Foster, the guy who plays the Nazi, like, is fucking furious with this guy and, like, is gonna kill him because of his little brother.
So he's literally unhinged.
Yeah, so he can't give him back.
Yeah.
Like, he can't give him back because, like, he's gonna fucking die if he does. So he's just like, okay, we just keep on keeping him.
Yeah, we'll just keep this kid. But the kid's time there, we gotta talk about
that. He's having the, like, time of his life. Like, they loved this kid. He was so cool.
He's hanging out with
Justin Timberlake,
who plays Frankie.
Come on, man. This is fucking ridiculous, man. What's going on here?
Yeah, he's there with his little crew.
Johnny, this is fucking crazy, man. What are we going to do, this kid?
Literally.
You're like, fuck Justin Timberlake.
I did, because honestly, if I close my eyes, I see his crew cut in cargo shorts and fedora, and I can see it. Yeah.
You're going to fucking kill this kid, man.
Yeah, I'm there. I'm in the scene
right now.
But, so yeah, his little stupid posse, it's like Justin Timberlake, this other guy that looks like Ratatouille's, like, human form. I looked him up
last night. I can't remember his name, but for some reason, he looks like, it wasn't him, by the way.
No, it's not. It looks like the other bad guy in Boys Don't Cry.
Yeah.
But yeah. So we have this stupid little crew that doesn't know shit from applesauce and the one guy that looks like the dude from Ratatouille. God, I can't remember his name. Oh, they call him Elvis.
Elvis.
So Elvis is just so far up Johnny Truelove's asshole and is like...
What's the kid's name? Frankie?
Frankie's Justin Timberlake.
So what's his name? The kid's name?
I don't know the kid's name.
It's a Kevin?
Isn't that fucked up? We should learn the kid's name. We look it up.
Yeah, we'll continue. Yeah.
Because this is, like, about him and his, like, real, like, life. So, yeah, basically, we have all of these morons, and Elvis is just, like, basically a servant to Johnny Truelove and has to do a bunch of errands and chores around the house for him because he like owes him money or something, and is all in love with him and is always hyping him up and feeding his ego. So we see this group of clowns sort of letting the boy that was kidnapped,
Zach,
we see them letting Zach have these like cool experiences because they're bringing him to parties and he's meeting girls and
he's meeting the cute chick from Jennifer's Body.
Yeah, he replaced Karen. She's in Mamma Mia too. Yeah, she is cute. She looks like a fish.
Cute fish.
Yeah. And so he's like meeting girls and having fun and drinking and smoking weed, and like we see them bonding. I remember we were watching it. You're like, when does this get fucked up? Like,
yeah,
what's
like,
up?
This is great. This is fucking awesome.
Yeah,
like this
cool.
Kid's getting his like getting dome checked, and like these chicks are wanting to, you know.
Yeah, doing taekwondo, having threesomes with Amber Heard, and girls.
He's having the time
girls.
Of his life, chugging beers.
Yeah,
feeling titties.
Yeah, and he's like Justin Timberlake and him are like bonding,
and he whoops his stupid little fedora wearing ass.
Yeah, he also is apparently like
really good at taekwondo.
Yeah, just like his brother, and starts like beating the brakes off Justin Timberlake, just like in a little like jokey match. And it's like the first time we see him, it's like, oh, okay, like maybe this guy like sort of has like some, I don't know, something about him.
He's awesome.
We've seen him as like really innocent up until we see his character blossoming with these bad guys.
Yeah.
You know, the bad guys that aren't, also again, you don't really feel like you hate that much other than Johnny. I hated him through the whole thing.
Oh yeah, Johnny's a fucking stupid piece of shit. He's such an idiot, bro. He's
yeah.
so dumb.
He's a moron.
Fucking Elvis just wanted to get in with Sonny. Like, he was taking the hits from fucking Johnny and his stupid fucking jokes. He was doing whatever the fuck he could to, like,
yeah.
become, like, a higher level gangster or whatever he wanted to do. And eventually they genuinely have to come to the decision, like Johnny's like, I have to kill the kid.
Yeah.
I can't keep him around.
They call the lawyer, and the lawyer is saying, basically, like, you're looking at 30 years or... I don't know, he says you're looking at life, and...
Did you ask for ransom? You're looking at life.
Yeah. All over, it was over $1,200 is what they ended up saying at the end of the movie. This whole debacle. And then he jokingly offers, you know, like testing the water, taking the temperature, Justin Timberlake. He's like, what would you say if I offered you $2,000 to waste the kid? And Justin Timber's like, what the fuck, bro? Like, no. And
$2,000.
So you just lost money on that, you fucking dumbass.
Yeah.
Like, idiot.
Deficit.
Yeah, you would have never taken that kid.
He's an idiot.
And you'd still have $200.
It sucks because the kid is so cool, man. Zach.
Yeah.
Zach, I need to figure out how you pronounce the last name, but it's Mazursky. Yeah, that was right. Mazursky. Zach Mazursky. It's so fucked up what happens to him, man. He's so cool.
Yeah, he is like a genuine kid, and he's like thinking that shit is sweet with these people.
And then the scene came, and it's when Johnny is like, I have nowhere else to turn. You know who's a punk ass bitch? Elvis.
Mm-hmm.
Elvis will fucking kill this kid because he's a punk little pussy,
mm-hmm.
and do whatever I say. And Elvis is like, yeah, we gotta do what the fuck we gotta do. And starts beating the shit out of Justin Timberlake.
Yeah, because like, Justin Timberlake's not
this.
With it.
Justin Timberlake's like, I'm not killing this kid. I love it. Like, this, me and this kid are cool.
And he tries, but not hard enough, may I mention.
No, he doesn't.
He could have told the kid what the fuck it was.
He's like,
want to go to the store?
You want to go on a drive?
Yeah.
Like, no, bro. Go fucking drop him off at the police station and tell him what happened. I guarantee you, like, they will let you off so smooth if you did that.
And even Bruce Willis, Johnny Truelove's dad, is like, give the kid back, give the fucking kid back, like, stop. And he's like, call it off. And Johnny Truelove's like, no, I won't call it off, basically.
Yeah.
And
thinks he's not gonna get caught.
Yeah.
So this whole time, Justin Timberlake and Elvis are driving, and this just random kid, Kevin, like,
yeah,
that's
who
just
looks like
some emo shit.
He looks like the boy, he looks like Oliver from Hannah Montana, and it
yeah.
was very bizarre to see his whole aesthetic in this movie.
And then, you know, like, they're just driving, they're like, yeah, we're gonna take you, hey, yeah, we're gonna take you home, Zach. And he's like, oh, thanks, Justin Timberlake, I really appreciate you as a friend.
Yeah, he's like, you're my boy, dude, we're boys.
Man, I would had the best day. You guys are so great. I would never snitch on you guys. I'm so glad you guys aren't going to kill me. That's so sick of you guys.
Literally saying these things like, my mom's going to be so pissed. I don't know
what do I say to her? That's crazy.
Justin Timberlake goes, tell her you're with a girl. Like,
tell her you're with a girl, man. Come on.
He's sitting up there lying to him like, oh, you love this kid so much. Like, you fucking putz. You're literally a bozo. You're helping take this kid to die. Like, fuck you too, dude.
And it's like this 15-minute long scene of this kid being completely oblivious and just having the time of his life. He's in bliss. He has new friends. He got laid. He had a threesome his first time having sex. And this kid is living his best life. He's never known pleasure like this. And then he literally got taken out the same night.
So fucked.
Yeah.
So, and they bring him to the top of the mountain. We see they have the last two witnesses walking down this, like, hiking trail. And they're about to walk up. And he's, like, freaking out. What's up there? What's up there, Frankie? And Frankie's like, you're my boy. I'd never hurt you.
And he's sobbing. The kudos to the actor. I'm going to look at his name.
He was so talented.
Anton Yelchin.
Okay.
Chin. Anton Yelchin, like, is blowing this performance out of the water. Like, he's so good. Like,
he's sickening.
He's, like, crying so heavily, like, and sobbing and panting. And he's, like, he doesn't know what to do.
And he knows what's about to happen.
He knows he's going to die. And he keeps, like, getting calm because he doesn't know what else to do. And Frankie keeps reassuring
him. Yeah, he's like, well, they're going to meet us up there. They're going to meet us up there and take you home.
I just have to duct tape your hands. Yeah. And he's like, no, Frankie.
You know I'd never hurt you. As he's putting the tape over his mouth, it's like, oh, my
and
God.
And Elvis fucking busts out an Uzi. And he's like, I can't concentrate with him. And he's like, don't let him kill me, Frankie. And like, sobbing. There's this funeral for him that he's looking at and
there's like a whole
torture, that psychological torture, like having your friend murder you and you're powerless, and you know
your friend's telling you the entire time,
and he finally calmed down enough to like let him put the duct tape on your mouth, and you're just like super calm. And then right when that happens, Elvis takes full advantage and grabs the shovel and dunk on the back of his head, and he falls into his grave and sobs until he unloads a little clip in him.
Yeah. Which was
little mag.
Like, what the fuck, dude?
It shocked and made me sick. You remember we had to pause it right after, because like I had to smoke a cigarette. Yeah. It felt gross.
And the whole time it was happening, you're like, that's not about to happen. Like,
I was like, this isn't going to happen. Like, there's no way.
You
like,
almost believe that.
Because the thing is like, the movie was so fun and, like, and joyful. And, like, you felt good about these characters. And, like, it was really, excuse me, it was really cool. And it really wasn't about, like, Johnny True Love. It was about Zach Mazursky.
Yeah. It doesn't even really become fully about Johnny until after they kill Jake. Zach. After they kill Zach. And then it becomes about him being on the run and the actual thing they mentioned in the beginning, him being on the FBI Most Wanted list.
Mm-hmm.
And so we see Elvis getting caught up, and God damn it, is he an idiot.
They didn't even bury him.
Bucket hat.
They didn't even bury him.
Elvis?
No, they didn't. None of them buried him.
Oh, the body.
Yeah, they just left.
Yeah. just
remember
leave.
They just left?
Yeah.
I was like, what?
Like, people hike up there.
Yeah.
Like, you just saw two people come down.
It's the worst place possible to do this. How'd you get away with digging it in the first place?
Yeah.
Why did you drive all the way out there, dig it, come back, pick him up, drive back?
Right.
Why not? Like, if you're going to go for the whole shebang, just go up there and
kill him, then dig it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Dig it, then kill him. Why'd you go back and forth? Because they don't know what the fuck they're doing. And Elvis is a fucking dunce.
I like how me and you are like, that's not the most efficient way to kill this fucking kid. Like, psychos.
Well, it's like, God damn it, Juju. No, the audacity just so on top of how stupid they were.
It was the dumbest crime ever committed. And like, no wonder you got put on the FBI's most wanted list. Somehow he like
alluded to it. For 10 years he was gone.
Because his girlfriend Olivia Wilde didn't want to suck his little dick anymore.
Yeah.
Because like he couldn't get hard because he was like freaking out about what he did. Good, fuck you.
Yeah, we see them hiding in a motel.
He's a blonde boy now.
His hair is now blonde as can be, and Olivia Wilde is like
looking
shaming
like
him. She's like shaming him. He goes to leave the room to get like something from the gas station. She gets snatched up. This is after they already snatched Elvis and Justin Timberlake. And Then, since he saw that happen, he got to escape. Finds a friend from middle school. If somebody that I haven't seen since middle school hit me up for even just to talk online, I wouldn't answer them. Somebody from middle school
sent me a picture of us from 9 years ago, like 3 days ago. I'm not kidding. Did you
answer them?
She was my friend in middle school. She was like,
would you give her a ride to the Mexican border?
No, three not times? At all, never.
Yeah, exactly.
I might say, like, she's like, oh, you're in town? Like, yeah, like, oh, I don't know. Hi, cool. Yeah, I don't think we'd ever, like, hang out.
Yeah.
Yeah, no.
Let alone give them a ride to the border.
And back and forth? No.
Three times.
Yeah, like, he's like, no, I want to go to Mexico. Wait, I don't want to go to Mexico. Wait. Oh, no, Mexico.
Yeah.
Having the same problem he did into the wild. He had to, like, get a canoe or some shit and get into the Mexican River. The Mexican River. Whatever. You know what I'm talking about.
Water.
Into the wild.
Yeah.
Like, the rapids he took to get into the Mexican border.
Yeah.
Yeah. He had to do that in this movie, too. It was actually the same guy.
No, he didn't.
Yeah, it was. It was actually the same guy. It was just from two different sides of it. Into the Wild takes place... right after he kills
that's his escape
into the wild. He burns all of his IDs and stuff and goes whitewater rafting to the Mexican border and travels up to Alaska and dies.
Yeah
that's what happens.
Yeah, that's it.
So it's crazy that they got the same actor to play the same guy but in two separate movies, and like you really like feel disassociated with them, but once you look at them in the same timeline it's really clear.
There's no other way to interpret it.
No, I'm Super Tramp, and this is Super Apple, and I super murdered Zachary.
That's exactly what's going on here.
Yeah, but yeah, they're the same movie.
No,
if there's anything we're talking about this entire podcast, it's the fact that they're the same movie.
It's the fact that don't let anyone distract you from they're the same movie.
Yeah. But
so no. We see this movie.
I feel like Alpha Dog is like the outlier in all of these movies, because I feel like the other two are kind of talking about more.
And that's what we were saying before. But hold on, we'll wrap up. Alpha Dog's happening. Basically, he gets caught. He was, like, in Singapore or something weird. Somewhere cool.
Yeah.
And
I think he was, like, in Italy or, I don't know, something.
They found him and took him and I don't know. Did he get the death penalty or life?
I think so. Yeah, I think he got the death penalty.
Yeah, they explain all of it at the end of the movie, like, the little, like, still frames.
Yeah.
And who got what sentencing and it was crazy. Really good, really sad, really fucked up. But yeah, it is the outlier. I'd say that Monster and Boys Don't Cry are talking more about very real issues that women experience, that sex workers experience, that the trans community experiences, like, and just really is about these very damaged, abused characters and just seeing that abuse in a really intimate way. Horrible way, like it's like powerless to watch, sort of.
I agree. It me as just a straight white guy, like it put me in a weird place having to like try to put myself into like the point of view of those characters, and it was like really shocking, and it's very like it hurt me a lot. I was like, wow, that is absolutely insane. Like I never knew fear. Like, I never knew, like, a fear like that.
Mm-hmm. Like, those things
that doesn't pass my mind, like, about, like, that would happen to me ever.
I think that's what, like, people would really hope writing these movies is to kind of let people who don't have those worries and concerns and are able to go on without having those threats, put them in that frame of mind to see and feel those things and, like, let you know, like, these things do exist, and just because they're
less,
not
your that's the thing. It's not that I don't know that, like, they exist, because, like, I am aware. It's
but to feel them.
Exactly. Yeah, to see it on lens. That level.
Yeah.
And to see, like, how, like, well-executed the film was able to depict it, and, like, I don't know. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you just feel like you're there. And I was putting myself in the position of these characters, and I never thought I could do something like that to that level, and it was shocking.
Yeah. No, because any movie could show you something, show you a story, but I really don't think every movie could make you feel something. And Monster and Boys Don't Cry, they definitely make me feel things that aren't just my normal everyday emotions or normal everyday fears and worries. Like, they push things to such a uncomfortable limit and shed light on such uncomfortable things. It's like very shocking and jarring to feel, but also like I said, that's more than art to make someone feel those things. Like, that's a gift.
I agree.
Restless pop.
There you go. Lay down, buddy. But yeah, and then, you know, Alpha Dogs, you know, just has, like, you know, it's a big shocking moment. Like, oh my God, I can't believe you, somebody would be able to do that to such a sweet kid.
It's more of a, I'd say Alpha Dogs is more of a slow burn. Boys Don't Cry is a slow burn as well.
Oh, yeah, it's.
Yeah, you have to just buckle in. And
Monster's high octane at points.
It's, I feel like Monster. Dude, this dog is killing me.
Slow down, bud.
I feel like Monster is much more commercialized than any of these, like, the most commercialized out of these movies.
I agree. I would say it's the most, yeah. I feel like more people have seen that movie.
Yeah. I mean, sure. It was a Hollywood movie.
My
Hollywood.
Mom has seen that movie.
Yeah. It was a Hollywood movie with Hollywood names on it, a studio production about a female infamous serial killer. Like,
yeah, played by Charlize Theron. Moms love Charlize Theron.
Yeah. She's a hit, dude.
She is a hit. She's a champion. But yeah.
All right. So those were our three. We're going to put an Instagram poll up so you guys listening to this on streaming, go on and vote for what we'll talk about next week. You guys on YouTube, go listen to the streaming more.
There's more episodes out on there.
Yeah, there's more episodes on there. But also, you guys streaming, you can watch on YouTube.
Plus, we don't expect you to have to look at us all the time.
Yeah,
you don't have to look
at
us at all if
that.
You don't want to. You can just listen to our voices and Mac.
Yeah.
In the cage.